American Radio Service.
Welcome to our show, Examine Life, on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Pat. Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio, Acorn Community Enterprises, or the underwriters of this station.
And tonight, we're going to view, through those same words and opinions, we're going to examine the baby boomer generation, of which Pat and I are both a part.
Yes. If you were born between 1946 through 1964, you're considered a baby boomer. And the term came about because of the boom of births after World War II with all the soldiers coming home. And there are 75 million of us. That's 29% of the population. We actually peaked at 78.8 million. Starting in 1952, 4 million babies were born each year until we made up 40% of the population.
So basically, we're big and we're fat and we're in your face.
And we have dominated society, unfortunately, to some think, but it's that's part of the cycle of life.
We've brought a lot of good and we've brought a lot of questionable things. We've all worked and built a big economy, and now we're kind of eating some of it up.
And we were the babies of the greatest generation.
Right. Our parents were, they went through the Great Depression. They went through World War II, two kind of major negative things. And they had this feeling that they wanted to treat us better. Some of us didn't have the benefit of that because of issues, but in general, the greatest generation wanted their kids to have more than they had, and I think they wanted that a little too much. They changed. Up until that time, kids were raised to be independent. You didn't have unions or governments to take care of you. You had to make it on your own, and that made people be stronger. They grew up stronger and creative, and they built a great nation. But the baby boomers kind of had a lot of life handed to us.
The greatest generation grew up, again, during the Depression, where jobs were rare. So they became very valuable. And our parents worked diligently at keeping their jobs. They were proud of fighting in the war, World War II. And when they came back, it was all about the job.
Right. And when you look at if you Google with images or whatever search engine you use, if you Google the Great Depression, you'll see a lot of pictures of people with signs saying, "I need a job," and clearly stating, "I'm not here for a handout. I'm not here for you to give me something. I'm here to work." You know, I know you see people on the street saying, you know, "We'll work for food." And we all know that a great majority of them really don't want to work for food. These guys did, because back then, the idea was, I don't want something for nothing. I just need work.
And the greatest generation didn't want their kids to have to fight to survive and to have to fight to find a job or even a good education, because they weren't able to finish high school or junior high school during the Great Depression. So a lot of them only got a seventh or eighth grade education. They had to fight to stay in school. And so they wanted their kids to have the benefit of a good education and a good job.
And the problem is that during times like the Great Depression, you know, people needed a handout. There were a lot of religious organizations, so on, to make sure that most everybody got fed. But the problem with the social programs we have now is that even in good times, those programs continue to be extended to people. And so we've created this baby boomers generation, which created subsequent generations that really don't have to be afraid to be hungry. And the problem is that being afraid to be hungry makes you creative.
Finding a job.
Yeah.
The greatest generation would continue to give and give and give us everything. And we were somewhat unthankful, unappreciative of all that we got, because we didn't suffer through the war or through the Depression. And we got to be that kind of generation, that it was all about me and what I want or what I don't want. without the acknowledgement of what it cost our parents. We were so used to them giving us things.
The thing was, the baby boomers actually were extensively more educated and college graduated than previous generations. And so you had these people coming back who had been raised in this environment of being creative and standing on your own two feet and doing your own thing. And they went to college. A lot of veterans went to college.
And on the GI Bill.
Right. And so we had this generation that was highly educated and highly productive, and they created this incredible economy, or created the beginnings of it. And then, but in the process, they kind of gave their children the education instead of earning it themselves. They kind of gave their kids, you know, an easier life. And they took away the strengths that they had gained by the Great Depression and World War II. And I know it sounds kind of depressing, but you need those kind of things to make you the kind of person who's going to move ahead and do things.
The GI Bill was passed in 1947, and that education component of that allowed millions of veterans to get a college education, and most of them were men. Women didn't primarily get college educations unless your parents were rich and they could afford to send you to college. Most women stayed behind and worked in the factories building airplanes and ships when the guys went off to war. So they did not get the benefit of that GI Bill education.
Right. And what's interesting is in the 40s during the war, the women stepped up to all the jobs that the men had been doing. So that proved that women were capable. And then in the 50s was when housewives started leaving the home and going out and working.
But a lot of them got stuck in the home as the suburbs were created. When young people are confident of their future, they start having children and they start establishing a home. And again, the Veterans Administration had financing, 100% financing to buy a house. And the builders were not stupid. There was a huge demand for housing because during the Depression, families congregated together, multi-families, generations lived in the same household. And the famine on the farms, many people abandoned the farms, and those homes were destroyed. So there was a huge need for housing. And most veterans got married, wanted to have children, and out came tract housing. And this was always on the outskirts of town where the land was the cheapest. And that's where that tract housing was built. And those became the suburbs. And that was the birth of the suburbs.
But the way one person describes it, a historian, is that it was an age of discontentment because the American moms did begin to find jobs outside the home. And living in those suburbs that didn't have the stimulations and the association that the inner city had, and the traditional extended family not being available, many children were left to fend for themselves, and those were the ones that became the latchkey kids.
Right, but moms, remember, in the 1960s is the first generation of women who were expected to get a driver's license. So, and they wanted a car, and that made them more mobile. That made them be able to get a second job. It wasn't that they didn't want to raise their children. A lot of it was, I have the freedom, I can get educated, I can get a job.
So they did.
They did.
But how'd the latchkey kids come about?
Well, that was, again, the affluence of having that second car had to be paid for. And so those kids, by then, were 8, 9, 10 years old, really on the edge of needing a babysitter or not. And remember, this was back when it was safe for kids to walk to school and walk home from school. So they would just walk home from school, have their key, let themselves in, lock themselves in the house until mom or dad got home.
And another part that the moms and dads seemed to avoid, apparently, was the creativity of being a parent. And so we got Dr. Spock.
We got a lot of things. We got a lot of television programs in the 50s and 60s. The entertainment that was available to us as baby boomer teenagers was music. Television brought us Elvis Presley and the Beatles. And I forget the name of the guy that introduced Elvis on television.
Ed Sullivan.
Yes, Ed Sullivan.
A really, really great shoe.
Yes. And that was, we were the first generation to have television. And then the music was so readily available. You could, you know, we had transistor radios, or you had a turntable that played music.
Well, you know, actually, there was a Greatest Generation guy who I know had a TV. It was funny. My family, we had times after the what I call the bad times. We had times when we didn't have food in the house, but we always had a TV. But back in the early 50s, when I was little, around 4 or 5, my father, who had lost his hearing in World War II, the VA actually paid for him to have a headphone set. So we had, I remember him watching Thursday night or Friday night fights with headphones, sitting in his easy chair in front of the TV. Those were the first headphones I ever saw, and this was back in probably 56, 57.
Well, that's also when television became the standard entertainment in the household. You had to have, you know, when you moved into the suburbs, you had to have a car in order for Dad to commute to work. Eventually, Mom would want a car because she was the first generation of women to get a driver's license. Prior to that, women didn't have driver's licenses. My mother never had a driver's license. She never knew how to drive a car. So ours was that first mobile generation. Television made us believe there were all these products for us to buy. They were catered to us. We were affluent. We were the first middle class created that marketers could target to sell us stuff on television.
It's just a modern version of the snake oil salesman. It's nothing new.
Yes, I know. But as kids, think about it. You were targeted to buy cereal because you were the ones watching cartoons in the morning. You were targeted to buy whatever it was that was being sold as either a kid or as Mom at home with the kids.
Yeah, but you got that decoder ring, and for a little while you were impressed until you realized how cheesy it was.
Right, but it was marketing. Everything was targeted towards those young kids.
Sure.
Those baby boomers. They were a huge population, continuing to grow. Their parents were getting, they were becoming middle class, affluent, and could afford to buy you these things. We were the first spoiled generation.
Well, we were completely spoiled. And you know, government markets itself that way, markets its programs, politicians market themselves. And all those gave us, they spoiled us in a larger way. They became our surrogate parents as our generation moved on. They told us, you know, your behavior doesn't matter. We'll take care of you, no matter what your choices. It just goes on and on. But we also, in the 1980s, was when the obesity epidemic became official. And interestingly, that's when our generation was hitting their 30s.
Well, our generation, you know, up until us, society had standards. They had dress codes. There was expected behavior and a respect for authority. Boomers were a throwback to protesters. We were the ones that wanted to not dress as expected. So our generation broke a lot of norms, set new standards as to what was acceptable in society.
You know what makes me feel sad is that the college protests in the 60s, they were anti-establishment. They wanted a new world, and they saw the government as overbearing and, you know,
the establishment.
The establishment. And these people became the establishment, and they became what they hate. And I never understood how they kind of bastardized themselves out to that. But
you can't be a child forever. You can't be totally self-consumed forever when you start having children.
But they did. When they got into politics, exactly as their predecessors, their way is the only way. They don't want to hear any other version but their own. They became our baby boomer generation, hippies and revolutionaries, became the very thing that they had a revolution against.
Well, we would eventually become decision makers, and we would take the place of the previous generation, whom we ran out overwhelmingly in just sheer numbers.
And became the old people that they originally didn't like, and started, again, we've been the spoiled generation all along. A lot of complaints now from the millennials and so on is that the baby boomers are eating up all of the retirement resources and the health care, and we are a logistical force to contend with.
Yeah, we'll get into that a little later in the show, but going back to the 60s and the 70s, and our impact on society was tremendous, and the Vietnam War changed all of that take from mom and dad. There was still the draft during the Vietnam War in the 1960s. And many, many young men went off to war unless you became a draft dodger.
Right. And it was horrible the way those men and women were treated when they came back because, you know, they weren't part of the big government or the industrial military complex or whatever people want to call it. They were just doing what they thought was the right thing. And they weren't all baby killers, but they were treated horribly by the populace when they came back.
And a lot of that was Hollywood and the people like Jane Fonda, who portrayed the veteran coming back as part of the establishment, and they were not winners because we did not win that war. It was the first time we faced guerrilla warfare, and we did not know our enemy, and we did not know the terrain on which we were fighting. And you'd think we would have learned something by that because we're in that same situation today. But we're still our generation still carries the scars of Vietnam.
Right. We weren't fighting in World War II. We were literally fighting for the survival of our nation. We really were.
Yes.
And there are probably people that think that's not true, but at the time, it was true. In Vietnam, we weren't. It was a political war, and it was being managed politically, and it was a bad thing, and it was wrong. But the people that went and served shouldn't have been treated the way they were.
Right. And it created a lot of resentment in our generation for the establishment, and they were not to be trusted on any level.
And they never should anyway.
No. The 1960s defined us via music. The rebellion protester came out. We wanted social change. We had a lack of respect for authority, the so-called establishment, and yet we embraced new experimentation, computers, drugs, a lot of things we probably shouldn't have.
Well, I mean, yeah, but everything has positive and negative in it, and the drug revolution destroyed a lot of lives. But it also, the hippies in the 60s brought a new way of thinking about things, a more open way of thinking about things. There was an establishment. And we have the same problem now. We have an establishment that is kind of the opposite of the old one, but it's still kind of stale and worn out and won't listen to anyone's ideas but its own.
But that's us now.
Yeah.
We are the establishment now, yeah, as the boomers have aged into decision-making positions.
And we have these ideas. And the problem, big difference is that these ideas are that people don't need to take care of themselves, and so many people aren't.
But we were the generation of... We ask, why not? Just watch me. I'll change that. I'll make it happen. I'll protest in the street.
Right.
I'll make social change. I'll force it. I'll make, you know, loud noises. I won't go away. The generation before us, children were heard and not seen.
Right.
We were not going to be that generation of, you know, we were going to be heard. We wanted to be heard.
And some of that was probably thanks to Dr. Spock.
Maybe
because
so.
Because that's the way some of those working mothers raised their kids. And we did change a lot. We radically changed the way people think about life. The 60s was a great time. There were good and bad that came out of it, and I think a lot of it's devolved into uncompromising ideas. But we solved the civil rights problem. You know, you can say what you want about the baby boomers. We did protest against the war. The only thing we did wrong there was the way we treated our veterans. But we did protest against a war that was wrong. And we fought for civil rights for,
yes,
a whole race of people. I mean, our generation did some great things.
We also fought for women's liberation. And we'll get into that after,
yeah,
a short break. That's one of my favorite subjects, women's rights.
Yeah, we'll be back in just a few minutes. This is Examine Life at KKRN. And our email is examinelife@kkrn.org. And remember, this is community-supported radio, and you out there, whoever might be listening to us, you are the community, and we need your support. And we also need you to tell us what you like and don't like about our station. And please tell us what you like or don't like about our show, and we welcome the argument. Be back in a couple of minutes.
A kiss before you leave me, and my imagination will feed my hungry heart. Leave me one thing before we part, a kiss to build a dream on.
Join the discussion.
KKRN boasts a variety of talk radio, both from local and syndicated sources. We want to stimulate thoughtful and meaningful conversation. KKRN can offer more real conversation because we are supported by listeners. You have a voice.
Make them believe they're true. Oh, give me your lips for just a moment, and my imagination will make that moment live.
The infinite possibilities of music are showcased by the eclectic panorama of song styles that you can find on KKRN Radio. You won't find our musical explorations on more mainstream commercially driven stations, from classic country to new age, from classic folk to classic rock, from blues to jazz, and music from outside our country. You'll find it all on KKRN listener-supported radio, radio that makes you listen.
Listening to Examine Live on KKRN at 88.5 FM in Bella Vista at Round Mountain. I'm Pat.
And I'm Steve.
You're listening to Examine Live, and now we're going to examine a few more things about us baby boomers.
We're talking about the baby boomers. And we're going to talk a little bit about the television and the music of the time. You know, in the 1940s, we had some great romantic music. They did have some music about the war and nationalism. In the 1950s, we had some great rock and roll.
Big bands.
Big bands had wonderful music. And I wasn't even around then.
No, me either.
But in the 1960s, we had a lot of music about romance, but we also had a lot of music about changing the world. We had the Jesus Christ Superstar play,
Hair.
The musical play. We had Hair, the musical play. We had all of the Janis Joplin and all the
Love.
All the singers that sang about changing the world. I mean, we were a generation, we were selfish and we were totally into ourselves.
The peace sign.
Right. But we wanted a better world. We triggered a lot of things, and our music was a lot of the strength for that.
Age of Aquarius. Look at the movies from the 1970s.
Yeah.
The clothing. Everything about that generation was different.
And an iconic movie. If any of you post-baby boomers out there want to understand our movement, a movie that was made towards the end of it was The Graduate with Dustin Hoffman. And it's about a love affair between an older woman and a younger man. But the real gist of the story is you look at his home, his life situation, and how he's rebelling, and how everything was established and you were supposed to follow your parents' footsteps. That's what we were rebelling against. We wanted a complete paradigm shift.
And women were very much a part of the movement of the 60s and 70s.
Of course, men were just kind of hanging around.
I was thinking more of in the workplace. First of all, women who were pregnant, they were not socially active prior to our generation. A girl did not go to school pregnant. Abortions were illegal, and there were a lot of back alley abortions. I knew girls that lost their lives or lost the ability to ever have children by back alley abortions. So we were still subject to that. We in the workforce, you had to wear high heels and stockings and a girdle. Nothing could jiggle. So it was very strict when I started into the workforce. And Women's Lib changed all of that. And with that came in the late 1960s was birth control.
So we had kind of a little bit of our own Sharia law going there.
Well, I wouldn't go that extreme. But we had birth control. Previous generations, women did not have a choice of having children or to be able to choose when they wanted to have children. That was a major change shift in society. Women could postpone having children by taking a little pill. And it was incredible.
Well, there were other ways to postpone.
Yes, but most of them were far more invasive, and you could not just an IUD was the primary or the rhythm method.
Actually, I wasn't thinking of all of those.
Oh, well, abstaining was probably not high on the husband's list of birth control.
No.
But we were able to choose, and many women were sold the idea that you could have it all. You could have a career, family, and a job that was fantastic, and you could postpone having those children till you were 40. But that did not prove to be the case in every time.
Right. I think one of the complaints was that they wanted to have it kind of both ways. You know, a lot of women wanted to have kids, not just for their husbands. They felt they needed to have children, but they also wanted to have a career. And that's what's probably caused a lot of the problem with salary disparities and so on, when you kind of want to have your cake and eat it, too.
Well, remember, when women came into the workforce, if you got pregnant, you got fired. You got sent home. They did not want you. There were not maternity clothes available for working women. So being pregnant was not compatible with the workforce.
Right, but if you had the pill, you didn't have to worry about that.
That's right. That was our not only our ability to choose when we wanted to have children, but we could participate in the workforce without getting scorned. One of the interview questions when you were applying for a job is, are you intending to have children? Because if you were, you were either not hired or you were put into a job, a dead-end job that would go nowhere. Because men did not want pregnant women in the job space. It was not a happy time for women until we got
that. So it wasn't because they might take time off. It was just them being pregnant in the workplace that they
didn't
want?
Well, it was that too, but it was the whole idea of them taking not only time off, but most women who had children would stay home a year or two.
Right.
And the company did not want to suffer the setback of having to train someone else. Despite the intelligence or that woman's contribution to the company did not see it as beneficial to them. So being pregnant was not a good thing for a woman in the workforce.
Right. It was unpredictability was
right.
the problem.
Right.
And when you own a business, if you don't have predictability, you end up not having a business.
Right.
So, I mean, it was right. It wasn't easy for women, but I don't think it was some kind of, you know, deliberate thing that men just didn't like women or pregnant women. It was a business decision. And well, I think many women make that now when they choose to never have kids.
And it could very well be. We weren't able to wear pants to work back then. You had to wear a dress or a skirt. And women's lib changed all that.
Right. That was a kind of the Sharia law thing I was talking about. It was really restrictive. Again, it was blaming women. You can't wear that because you'll tempt the men, and that's ridiculous.
Well, women finally, in the women's liberation movement, we had the right to speak out. Before that, our dad or our husband spoke for us in generations previous to us. So this was our first chance to speak out on our own behalf. We didn't have to stand in the shadows anymore. And we could participate in the workforce.
And I remember those, you talked before about the dress codes. And I remember it was my last year in high school when the dress codes were dropped. And I already had ADD. My concentration at that point was completely gone.
Well, they called it a sexual revolution for a reason.
Yeah.
It was not only the discarding of the bra and the girdle and a few other things.
And about 16 inches of material.
Yes, skirts got really
yeah.
short. Hot pants became the thing. So it was a sexual revolution. Of course, men benefited from that as well. But it made women probably much more promiscuous than previous generations of women,
right.
having the birth control. Boomers made divorce acceptable. You know, we now number our spouses. So
right.
Up until then, divorce was frowned upon.
Right.
And boomers brought that to front and center of society saying, you know, if we don't want to stay in a marriage, we won't. And society had to adjust.
And a lot of traditional people have a problem with that. You know, marriage used to be a permanent thing and now it's not any longer. But in many cases, marriage is permanent because an abused woman felt like she couldn't leave the marriage.
Or if you had continuously had children, the only way not to have children was abstention, and most men weren't going to go for that. So women would have 10, 12 children until their bodies literally gave out. So it was a whole different concept of female-male relationships. And Women's Lib came along, and we, you know, broke the glass ceiling in corporate America. We busted up the good old boy power clan. And all of those were beneficial to women. It may have been detrimental to men. I don't know. I'm not one of them. But it was a shift in society, clear across the board in everything. And a lot of it had to do with the availability of birth control.
Well, the detrimental to men was basically just people don't like change.
Right.
And the movie The Graduate was about everything staying the same, and the new generation wasn't going to have that. So,
and it was a power shift.
Right. And it's still going on. I mean, you still have women who think in the old traditional ways as well as men.
But as women broke that glass ceiling and became part of the corporate structure in the decision-making part of corporate America, that's when you got daycare. That's when you got a number of other benefits that benefited the family as a whole. You got time to take off to have a child. You weren't fired, or you didn't have to come back to work in 6 weeks when you could just barely walk again.
Right.
So it became beneficial. Women became beneficial to other women, subsequent generations, by boomers, baby boomer women being in the workforce.
But it's too bad that they couldn't switch places or just not have children, because I think a lot of children probably suffer. Daycare is not the loving environment that having one of the parents at home.
No.
And the thing is, I'm not saying women should have stayed home. I think more men should have stepped up and said, you know what, you go have a career for a while, I'll be the parent. And there's no reason why that couldn't have happened.
Well, we do. The latchkey kids were probably more self-sustaining and more independent. And many boys that had working moms had a greater respect for women than the previous generation, who saw their dad walk all over mom. And in this case, this generation of women weren't going to have that.
Well, I think it depended on how the women handled having a job and how they handled that with their kids.
This is true. But again, it goes back to an overall society perspective. And women's liberation changed all of that. And it wasn't easy. There was a struggle on the home front, the family. My mom and dad didn't think I should work and have a career. They didn't think that that was appropriate for a woman. Getting an education was secondary. Why do you want an education? You already have a small job.
And that was the part about changing the paradigm. That's what the 60s did. And every revolution, change is always painful. The five stages of grief are not just about someone dying. They're about any change.
That's
any
right.
Severe enough change.
And, you know, the generation brought people like Bill Gates, Steve Jobs. We embraced, our generation embraced newness. We embraced the computer. We embraced new entertainment. All the great generation moviegoers.
Our generation created the modern computers. Not
yes.
not the old ENIAVACs, but they created the modern computers. Our generation created the iPhones and the a lot of the smartphones. They're being created by younger people now, but we gave the world most of the technology that we have now.
And it was us coming through the revolution of protesting on college campuses, protesting on the streets, protesting women's lib, civil rights, all of these things, and then becoming, as we aged and moved into those decision-making processes, carried those values forward with us and tried to endear the next generation with those benefits.
I think one of our problems as baby boomers, as a generation, not all of us, but I think we... again, the obesity epidemic occurred with the baby boomers hitting their 30s. We were the first obese generation, and I think it's because we learned the wrong values.
Well, we're a little self-indulgent. We're a little self-centered. We're a little me, you know, the me generation. It doesn't matter what it cost you, my mom and dad. It was about me and what I wanted or didn't want. And so I think our generation is more self-centered and narcissistic than any previous generation.
And they always had things like health care. They had unions that gave them great health care benefits. They had unions or government that gave them great defined benefit retirement plans. They never really had to struggle to create their own life in many cases. And we became obese. And look what it's doing to the health care system now. We're the biggest drag on the health care. And it's not the fact that we're getting older. It's the fact that we have a lot of bad habits.
It's also we're getting older. There's no doubt about it.
But it's our bad habits, because there's a lot of people who had better habits who were in their 90s and beyond who are healthy and aren't taking up the dollars of the health care.
And we can't talk about the boomers without the word hippies and the hashish age.
And I was both of those.
And again, this was pot was the drug of choice. It was easily obtainable. It was cheap. And a generation of permissiveness, it went to all of our heads, literally.
And you had your college professors like Timothy Leary saying, you know, tune in, turn on, and drop out. He recommended that you build your life through LSD.
And many, you know, many people were open to experimentation. So they tried all of those things and today suffer the consequences. Many of those people that are now in their 70s are having the chemical changes in their brain that brings out the side effects, you might say, of LSD that was taken back in the 1970s.
And but again, both sides, you know, we overreacted to some things because LSD could be so harmful to people. There was a great military study decades ago that showed that LSD showed great promise towards curing alcoholism, but because it was the drug it was, the research was never pursued.
Well, smoking was still very cool back then, so smoking pot was easy. I believe LSD was not a smokeable.
Oh, LSD was very easy. You put basically it was a dab on a piece of paper and you just put it on your tongue. That's all it was taking. Mm-hmm. LSD was very simple to take.
But it wasn't cool like smoking.
Oh yeah, it was. During the hippie generation, smoking pot was like having a beer. LSD was like having a drink.
Yeah, I bet. I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, it could have been. I never did that stuff, so
and
I don't know.
It short circuits parts of your brain, so it was an experience that seemed religious in many cases to people. Timothy Leary thought it was.
We know what happened to him.
Yeah, he wrote a book, speaking of our generation, he wrote a book that basically mirrored the book, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which is instructions on how to proceed to your next life. He wrote that in terms of LSD, of an LSD trip. It was pretty sophisticated.
But unusual.
Yeah, it was harmful. Don't get me wrong. A lot of what we did in the 60s was harmful, but every revolution is, and it has a lot of good in it as well, and I think probably an equal amount of good.
Well, even now you see many of those old hippies wearing the long ponytail as their badge of rebellion, and the young generation thinks, oh, my God, get over yourself already.
You've got to love it. When you go to places like Eureka and Fort Bragg, now that's dedication when you see people my age that still look, except for their bodies, they look exactly like they did 50 years ago.
Again, it's like, when do you get over yourself and grow up?
You know,
it's kind of that thing. And we're talking about growing up. We were going to be young forever. We were told by television you could be young forever. You could have white teeth. Toothpaste would, you know, mouthwash would make your teeth beautiful forever. Everything was on targeting us for marketing, from fashion. It was okay to be anorexic or bulimic. It was okay to get breast implants. It still is. Anything to preserve our youth. So we have become self-centered, narcissistic, spoiled adults who want it all, including youth.
Yep. We are one of our generation is not finished yet. We've had a great influence, both positive and negative, and it's not going away. We're living a long time. This is Examine Life. This is KKRN in Bella Vista at Round Mountain, community-supported radio. You out there listening are the community, and you need to support your local station and tell us what you like and what you don't like. Our email is examinelife@kkrn.org, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
The bright, blessed day, the dark, sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
It is a wonderful life, and you can find snippets of it on KKRN live shows, done by local volunteers and supported by you, our listeners and underwriters. You can contact our show at examinelife@kkrn.org, or if you want to financially support the radio station, via underwriting for your company or by donation, call 530-337-1101.
much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself,
where can you find live radio theater today? On KKRN, of course. Wicked Fell Radio airs weekly on Thursday evenings from 8 to 8:30. Long enough to tell a good story and stimulate thoughtful conversation, short enough to get on with your evening. Wicked Fell by Bill Shockley.
Welcome back to Examine Life. Tonight we're examining the baby boomers.
And we are both of that group.
Yes, and something that really imprinted on us was the assassination of John F. Kennedy. We were filled with hopes and dreams about the space program that he had initiated, the Peace Corps, which he had initiated. He was a very popular president for our generation, and it was devastating, his assassination.
In our country, many, many people, and I know we'll get arguments about this, but many, many people have the system pay for their life, pay for their livelihood. And John Kennedy said, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And we've lost that, not just our generation. We've passed that loss on to other generations.
And we had the attitude of we can do anything. He led us to believe that with the space program and NASA and all of the products and things that came from NASA.
And he said, we do these things not because they're easy, but because they're hard.
Yes. And his assassination, followed by his brother, Bobby Kennedy, who was a presidential candidate at the time, really deepened our distrust of the system. And then when Martin Luther King Jr., who was a respected activist, it challenged our beliefs in the establishment, how these great people could be just killed and wiped out of our society when we had such respect for them.
And I think that's what our generation has lost. We distrusted the establishment, but now our generation has become the establishment, and somehow we have a trust that these people who are in politics have our best interest at heart. And I don't understand that. I wish someone would email me and explain to me why you believe that these established politicians are thinking of anything but themselves.
Well, we put a man on the moon. I guess we believe that we can get our politicians to do what we want.
I guess so.
Nixon in the 70s proved politicians, thus the government could not be trusted. We're better off trusting the likes of James Bond 007, who brought the sexual revolution to movies to us.
Yeah. And before him, Johnson showed that you couldn't trust politicians to run a war.
That and Johnson robbed Social Security, which was supposed to be a trust where people put money in there. And when they got to the age of retirement, they could pull out their own money. And with the amortization factor of interest on money, it would grow and be this wonderful endowment. But Johnson robbed the Social Security to pay for the Vietnam War.
So again, I'm serious. Any of you out there who happen to be listening to us, I would like an explanation of how you believe any politician or group of politicians is going to do what's right.
And we also created the generation gap. It was a gap between us and our parents, and now we have a canyon between us and the millennials. A lot of it is, yes, the millennials cry out that they have to have two wage earners to make a living. But that was true of us, too, in the 1980s.
Right. We had to have two wage earners when I was raising my young kids and was working at a very low salary, which was right around minimum wage, I think. And I took a second job because we wanted to have a full-time parent at home, and we had made that agreement. So we had two wage earners, and I was them. And that's the way you do it. You don't complain and get handouts. You go, well, what do we have to do to survive here? How can I be creative? How can I work hard and make it happen?
Millennials believe that we don't pay our fair share.
Millennials
believe we don't pay our fair share. But we are paying. We're still 20-25% of the workforce. We're still paying for many of the social programs that the government pays out. The middle class paid for all the benefits to society over the past 40 years. Middle class has shrunk, and we're still part of that shrunken middle class that's trying to pay for it all.
Right. I think what we gave them was the tendency to cry about somebody else being the cause of their problems. I think that's what we gave the millennials.
Well, that's possible. We were pretty self-indulgent. Even, you know, we talked about younger, how we needed to be younger, and that's true in retirement.
Well, when I look at how many millennials are living in their parents' home because they don't want to build their own life or claim that they can't, no, I think we created that. If you allow a child to live in your home, then you're not being a parent.
Well, when we turned 18 years old, you were thrown out. There was no choice of staying at home, and most of us look forward to getting out of the home.
Right, and it was tough, but you know what? It was life.
And you put four or five people together in an apartment to pay for it, but that was how you got away from mom and dad. And that's no longer the case. It's quite acceptable to have a 30-year-old living at home with mom and dad, and we would not consider that acceptable as, you know, 20-somethings. Or 30-somethings, and yet we allow our children or grandchildren to do it.
Unfortunately, I think that's one of our legacies, and we have ourselves to blame for that.
We as retirees, by 2030, I want to talk a little bit about finance, because a lot of the younger generations don't understand why we're still working. And a part of it is that in the 1980s, we all had, or adults working primarily, had defined benefit programs, and those were getting thrown on the wayside because corporations could no longer afford them. So the government, realizing that they had robbed Social Security, they decided that the answer to future retirement was the IRA, the individual retirement account, which everybody could take advantage of. But they had a limit of $2,000 a year that you could put in there. So even us working middle class 40-somethings at the time could only put in $2,000. Well, at $2,000 a year, this is not going to grow very fast.
This is what happens when politicians control things.
And then they didn't increase that from the 1980s till the 2000s to $5,000 a year. Well, by then, we're in our late 50s. And it's like there's no time left to accrue this horrific retirement. They also, in the late 80s, early 90s, they created the 401k program. But it also had limits of how much money you could put in there. And you had to work for a big corporation to get any benefit from that. So we did not have the retirement choices that other generations have had or the time available.
We had too many restrictions on what we could do, and so the alternative was to go to work for a state or a county that gave you a defined benefit program. Excuse me, and some of those are declaring bankruptcy now because they can't afford to pay that defined benefit program.
It even happened to a number of the airlines when they went bankrupt. Those stewardesses and pilots, they were, you know, no money. There was no money available for their retirement. When we had the housing recession in 08, most of our retirements in IRAs and 401ks was in the stock market. And that 50% of it got wiped out in a week. So we don't have that huge lump sum retirement program, nor do we have 30 years ahead of us to create it. So we are dependent upon Social Security. And that's why there's a lot of argument about Social Security. And I understand the argument that, yes, it's got to be changed. If you're making $300,000 a year, $2,000 a month is not going to make any difference to you. But the person making $100,000 or less a year, that $2,000 a month is monumental to their survival.
And the problem with Social Security, of course, was it always that it was under control of the government, and people like Johnson can raid it, and what benefit there was to it was ruined. And so I think freedom would have been the better choice, to plan for the future yourself and accept the consequences if you couldn't. And it sounds cold and vicious, but you know what? It's what makes people grow up.
Well, possibly. But like I say, we were under the illusion that the money we paid into Social Security was in a trust.
Which is why it's something that shouldn't have happened. We wouldn't have had the illusion.
And so now I realize subsequent generations think that they're paying for our retirement and paying for our Medicare, but it wasn't originally structured for them to have to pay. It was originally structured that we would draw out our own money.
Right.
But that didn't happen. Legislations cannot be trusted to always do the right thing, or they decided they weren't going to pay it back. It was a loan at the time.
The government giveth and the government taketh away. Yeah,
that's right. So a lot of that is true about they think we're sucking the system dry, but there's a reason that we can't quit working, really. A lot of us still have to work.
And again, the government, you know, and the programs are responsible for a lot of that. Even the unions have wrecked some company economies and defined benefit plans. But the baby boomers that took advantage of that, the baby boomers that don't protect their own health, that don't live with the right lifestyle, they're to blame as well. I mean, we are to blame when we are personally responsible for something and for not planning ahead and for depending on the Social Security thing. I know it was promised, but the generation before us learned not to believe people who promised them things.
Well, the millennials, if that's how I'm saying that right, they are now supposedly the biggest part of the population. But what they don't take into consideration when they count these statistics is immigration. The largest part of immigration is in that age group, born between 82 and 2004. And so immigration has made up a huge part of that millennial generation. So it's not that we had so many children and our children had so many children. It's not that way. Birth control cut that. Now there's less than two children per family born. So it's mostly the immigration that has made up that huge number of millennials that make up that part of the population.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's just when you have this kind of growth, you need to have a vibrant economy to support it and to create new jobs and so on, and we're kind of at a stagnant place right now. Again, most of that, in my opinion, caused by certain of our generation.
But our generation also was the generation that if you didn't go to college because dad paid for it, sometime in your life, in your 30s or 40s, you went back to school and got that college
right.
education.
Yeah.
And we are the first middle-class generation to have gone to college and gotten that advanced education. And we expect our children to. And student loans were not available to us. Those were only available to rich kids. The lower and middle-class kids did not predominantly go to school on student loans like they do now. And Pell Grants are, even now, are only available to advanced education, postgraduate work. So there's no grant money available for college education. And I believe that kids should get a college education. But I think they should have to repay the money, but I think it should be interest-free.
Well, the problem that I have right now is that if you look, I didn't have time to write down my research results, but the types of degrees that kids are getting and then they graduate and they don't have the money is because they're not serious. The types of degrees a lot of them are getting aren't things they can make money at because they have this idea that, you know, I don't have to worry about those loans. And they're not serious about the kind of career that will actually give them a living to make. And I don't agree that everyone needs to go to college. There are some people that aren't suited. I have people that I know and people that I'm close to who are doing very well who never went to college.
And I agree with that. There are many people that contribute to society without a college degree.
And succeed financially.
Oh, yes. They're as happy and as successful as college graduates. But I think that the education should be available. I think it should be available interest-free. But I think that a part of the blame goes to the colleges, as they knew that the government would give them the money that these students signed for loans. The student didn't get that money. The college did. It was easy for them to keep creeping up tuition fees without any input from the college, knowing that the government was going to help pay for it.
Well, I want to make a couple of important points here. One of them is that interest-free means that somebody is paying part of your way because that money isn't free. We're using somebody's money to do that. But if we're going to do interest-free, I don't believe it should be government doing that And actually, the university that I'm going to be taking my master's in has a program, because they don't believe in those loans. They have a program where they loan the student the money interest-free. And if you're a veteran, they actually give you a discount. And this is a university. It is all online, but it's an accredited university. And they're going to do the interest-free loan themselves. I'm all about that. But if you mandate interest-free loans, somebody's paying that interest.
Well, again, if it's taxpayers' money and the government, it's the government's, supposedly the government's money, they're doling it out, that means it's my money. Okay, and if I can afford to, if the government can afford to give my money to foreign countries as foreign aid, then by golly, they ought to be able to loan it to other American kids.
But I don't think she'd be giving it to either one.
Well, I know, but it, since they already do both, I think those should be interest-free loans.
And another quick story, when we left Vietnam, we were given VA benefits for college. I had one child and one on the way. And the amount of money I was getting from the VA was enough to buy my books. And so I worked full time. We raised two kids and I completed college. And that's what we've lost, is this desire to fight and get through it. It's like, well, if I can't have an interest-free loan, then I don't want to go to college. We need that fire back that we had in the Greatest Generation and seemed to end with them.
And there was a belief that you could make it on your own. As we came out of high school, we had a belief we could make it on our own. You may not have had the choice of college. You might have had a choice of a trade school. You might have just been able to have industrial arts through high school, and that would get you a job. But we believed in ourselves and that we could do it.
Look at all the movies that Hollywood makes. When is a movie really good? When do you have an emotional moment? Is it when somebody gets benefits, or is it when somebody overcomes everything and makes it on their own? What makes a good movie? Think about that. The very people making those movies believe that we shouldn't follow that value system.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guests, and participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Radio, Acorn Enterprises, or underwriters.
This has been Examine Life. Our email is examinelife@kkrn.org. I hope I've raised some feathers and somebody will send us a message.
Good night.
Oh, we'll see you next time.
Good night.
Fall River at 336-6535 or in Big Valley at 294-5241. Medi-Cal, Medicare, and private insurance are all accepted. There is a sliding scale available. On the web, mountainmtnvalleyhc.org. Thanks, Mountain Valley, for supporting KKRN.
The Oak Song Society for Preservation of Way Cool Music presents Blame Sally, an emotionally charged, highly melodic, and irresistibly compelling, infectious blend of indie folk, sweet harmonies, and hard-driving instrumentals. Friday, May 6th. Event takes place at the Pilgrim Church, 2850 Foothill Boulevard in Reading. Doors open at 7:15. Show starts at 8. Pre-event tickets can be purchased at The Music Connection, 3086 Bocelli Lane, 223-2040. For more information, go to Oak Song.
Programming on KKRN Community Radio is brought to you in part by Les Schwab Tires in Burney. Les Schwab is an independent tire dealer in business since 1952. Les Schwab in Burney offers tires, brakes, alignments, wheels, batteries, shocks, and even automotive parts. Les Schwab is located at 37462 Main Street in Burney. Quotes or appointments can be made by calling 335-2251, or their selection can be seen online at leschwab.com.
Welcome to Jazz Variations with Tonia King.
Thanks for joining me on the show today. Jazzvariations.com is where you can find out everything about the program, and I hope you'll check it out. And be sure to like us on Facebook. Coming up on the show today, new music from Elias Hoslinger in the CD Spotlight. We're also going to check out music from guitarist Danny Caron. We'll hear something from the Big Fat Band. And also on tap, some requests from our friends listening throughout the Jazz Variations Network. And I encourage you to do that.